Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Lamed Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 22 lines from the top of Daf Lamed Ches, a little bit less than halfway down the Daf. You'll notice a house shape at the end of the line, Amsei Demar Shmuel. On the side of the Gemara, before we get into the text, let us read our Nosei, the topic heading, / Mivneh. Structural note. The house is featured. Gimel Maisim, there are three stories as you go down the Omid, Be'inyan Pidyon V'Shichur Shivcha, regarding the redemption and the freeing of a bondmaid. Stories 1 and 2, Pidyon Migoyim, involve the redemption of the bondmaid from the hands of heathens or Gentiles. And 3, Shichur Shivcha the Ovdu Bo Isur, the freeing of a bondmaid who was, prior to the freeing, a victim of, we'll say, immoral behavior. Scan ahead, by the way, as we often advise in Gemara markings, and you see how the houses appear and hence the positioning of the various stories. Now the Gemara. Amsei Demar Shmuel Ishtaboy, the bondmaid of Shmuel was Ishtaboy, means taken captive. Pirkuha, she was redeemed, Lushum Amsa, for the purpose of continuing enslavement. Vishadrua Le, and the redeemers sent her to Shmuel. In other words, here's your bondmaid to continue enjoying her services. Sholchu Le, they sent to him. Anan k'Rab Shimon ben Gamliel sviralon. We are of the opinion of Rab Shimon ben Gamliel, and he was featured in our previous shiur, that said whether the redemption is for enslavement or for freeing purposes, the slave continues his enslavement, his or her enslavement. And hence, we redeemed her, and whatever the case, whatever the mindset would have been, she continues her bondage. At you, Reb Shimon Gamliel, inami k'rabbonon svir aloch, even if you hold like the Rabbonon, that one who is redeemed for freedom purposes in fact goes free, anan l'shum amsuk parkinu lo niyalo, we who were the redeemers redeemed her with bondage purposes in mind, and therefore we're sending her to you. Ve'inhu savor, now they thought, the redeemers thought, the redeemers who redeemed her for servitude purposes, for continued enslavement, they thought, Lifnei Yeush Havev, that Reb Shimon Gamliel was the owner, that is Reb Shmuel, correction, Shmuel, who was the owner, was pre-Yeush. Yeush is a state of mind where one gives up, resolves himself to the loss. So they thought that Shmuel still had in mind getting her back at some point. Velo he, and that was not the case. And here we continue in the Gemara with a long point. Li'achar Yeush Have. The situation involving the bondmaid of Shmuel was where he had already given up hope. It's after Yeush, and at that point, she is considered Hefker, as Rashi says, and she's considered unowned. Ushmuel, and with regard to Shmuel, the original owner, lo mibaya dishtabudi lo mishtabidba, not only is there no intention to continue her servitude, he has no intention of keeping her as a bondmaid, elogito de cherusa nami lo atzercha. He doesn't even require for her total freedom a document of freedom, Gita de Cherusa, sometimes referred to as a Get Shichur, It's a document freeing her. Now, the freeing of a bondmaid results in her being able to marry a Jew. She, in effect, is converted into a full-fledged Jew as a result of receiving a Gita de Chirusa Get Shichur. In this case, she doesn't even require that. Shmuel Etamei, in saying that, Shmuel is consistent with what he has held elsewhere. Yomar Shmuel, Hamafkir, Avdo, Yetzi Lecherus, V'eino, Tzorach, Get Shichur. One who declares his slave unowned, he goes free and does not require a freedom document. Shneamar, the Pasuk says, V'chol Eved Ish, Miknas Kesef. That's a description of an Eved. An Eved is one who is enslaved to a man. Eved Ish, V'lo Eved Isha. Is it possible that one is enslaved only to a male owner and not to a female owner? So that's obviously not the case. Women can own slaves too. Elo Eved, Sheishlo Rishus L'Raboy Olov Koru Eved. A slave that's owned, that is controlled by a master, that is a slave. Shein loy rishus l'rab olav ein koru yeved. A slave that's not under the control of a master, for example, declared unowned, is not called an eved. Oh, he's not called an eved. He's considered, therefore, a free man and doesn't even need a get shichur. The get shichur is there to release someone from servitude. Amsei, another story, the Rebbe Abo Bar Zutro Ishtaboy. The bondmaid of Rebbe Abo was taken captive. Parko Hahu Tarmado Lushum Itzob. A Gentile from Tarmud. Tarmud is a name of a country, a region, a place, and a goy from Tarmud redeemed her from captivity for the purpose of marrying her. Sholchulei Ludidei. Jewish community sent a message to the original owner, that is Rebbe Abba, Yeus, if you want to do the right thing, Avdis, Yeus Avdis, if you want to do the right thing, Shodar Logita de Cherusa, send her a freedom document. The Gemara asks, Hey Chidomi, what are the circumstances there? Like, what are you talking about? What in the world does the freedom document of Rebbe Abba have to do with this, with his bondmaid that was redeemed by a Thermidorian Gentile? E demotsu parki law. If the guy, if the Gentile wants to give her to the Jewish community, to Rebbe Abba, in exchange for money, why should she receive a freedom document? Let her be redeemed by the Jewish community or by Rebbe Abba for servitude, for continued bondage. If it's beyond their power or it's impossible to redeem her, what benefit is there in having her sent a get shichur, a gita de cherusa? She's under the control of the Tarmidoyan. The Gemara responds with two approaches, and you'll notice we have them numbered one, and two lines later, a number two appears. Li'olam demotsu parki law. The story is such that they could redeem her. The Kevon de Mishtar law Gita de Cherusa, and since she is sent a get shichur, Chavurecha mechabri ahadodi uparki law. That will cause the Jewish community to get together and gather funds for her redemption. Rashi points out, if she were to be redeemed for continued servitude, they wouldn't be motivated to redeem her. They don't hold by Reb Shimon ben Gamliel that we saw back on Daf Lamed Zayin with Beis, who held just like a mitzvah, just like it's a mitzvah to redeem a free person, it's a mitzvah to redeem a slave. They make the distinction, and hence, for motivational purposes, it's important that she is sent a freedom document in order to hasten or motivate the Jewish community to redeem her. V'boy Seima, another approach to this story is Li'olam de lo matzu parki law. they, under, let's say, regular, normal circumstances, this guy was not going to release her. He wanted her. And you'll ask then, what's the benefit of her being sent a get shechur? V'kevon de mishadir lo gita de cheirusa, when they sent to her a freedom document, mitzilah ba'ape umafrik law. Rashi explains, mitzilah ba'ape, she's cheapened in his eyes, mitnei shigale lekoil, sheshifchas Yisrael hoisa. This will redeem that the woman he took was a slave woman to the Jewish community. She was a slave woman in the Jewish community. And mafrik law means, and he will then part with her, he will then give, allow her to be redeemed for in accordance with her value. So according to this version, the freedom document would be the catalyst for her release. Otherwise, just having just offering money to that guy, that wouldn't be enough to release her. According to what we said, then, the freedom document cheapens her in his eyes, and he's not going to want to keep her. The Gemara asks, is that really so, that he's not going to want to keep her? The Omar Mar. There's a saying that there's a, you could say it's a halacha, but it's more of a, let's say, a sociological observation, that chaviva lahen behemtam sheyisrael yosim in shoseim. Goyim would prefer the animals of Jews, and in this case, certainly the bondmaid of the Jews, more than their own wives. So what effect is sending this get shichur going to have when the goy will really want to keep her? She's of greater interest to him than his own wife. The Gemara says that observation is true, but hani mili betzina, that's true when things are in the quiet. Avol b'farhesya, when it comes to matters of public knowledge, zila behu milsa, it's beneath his dignity. So, with that in mind, the sending of the get shichur would then publicize her as being a Jewish bondmaid, and that would be beneath this Tarmudol's dignity to keep her, and he therefore would release her in exchange for money. Another story, Hahi Amso, Dahavis Bepumbadisa, Dahavu Ko Ma'abdi Bo Inshi Isur. There was a bondmaid in Pumbadisa that the menfolk in that community were behaving with her immorally. You'll notice we have a couple of names with double underlines. On the side, we have a tatnose followed by a mivne. The tatnose is the Isur Shichur Avodim Knanim. There's a prohibition in general of freeing Canaanite slaves. Canaanite slaves are slaves that a Jew buys that their origin is not of a Jewish nature. As opposed to an Eved Ivri, that's a separate parsha. The Torah describes the Eved Ivri in detail. That's a Jew that is that has sold himself into slavery, or the court sold him into slavery. Here we're talking about the, we'll say, the standard type Eved, the Eved Kanani. The Torah tells us, Le'olam b'em tavodu, it's prohibited, it's, you shall always keep them enslaved and do not free them. That's by rule of thumb. The double underlining is featured under the Mivnet. We highlight Abaye and Ravina. The Cholkim, they have a disagreement, Bedvorov Shel Rabbi Yehuda, Be'inyan Hanal, within the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda regarding this topic, Kishenoigea L'matzev Shel Shivcha Kenainis Shenoagu Bo Yisur. What is the attitude of Halacha when you have a situation like this of a Shivcha Kenainis, that's being, let's say, participant or the victim of immoral behavior? Now the Gemara. Omar Abaye, Ilav the Omar of Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, if not for the fact that Rav Yehuda in the name of Shmuel says, Kol HaMeshachar Avdoi Oiver Ba'asei, anyone who frees his Eved is in violation of a positive command in the Torah, which we referred to earlier, La'olam b'hem tavodu, that's the Pasuk, Have Kaifino Le Lamora, I would force the owner of that bondmaid, because of Logita de Chairusa, and he would write a freedom document, and with that, she would then marry, be able to marry a Jew. She would have a husband who would watch over her. Ravina Omar, Ravina says, Ki ha, moide Rabbi Yehuda, mishum milsa disura. In the case where the bondmaid is the victim of immorality, Rabbi Yehuda would concede that it is allowed to have her freed. The Gemara asks, you'll notice we have a long question going to the second line from the top of Amud Beis. Ve'abaye mishum isura lo, and with regard to Shitas Abaye, Abaye's opinion, when there's isura, when there's prohibitions being violated, is it so that you nevertheless cannot redeem her? Ve'omar Rav Chanina bar Rav Katina, Omar Yitzchok. There was an incident involving a woman. She was part enslaved, part free. You can have a situation like that, for example, where a woman was owned, a shivcha, a bondmaid, was owned by two people, and one of them released his holding in her. So she's half free, and she's also half enslaved to the other partner. The Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis. V'kofu es rabo v'yasol bas chorid. And the court forced the owner and to free her. V'yomar Rav Nachman Yitzchok minhag hefker nahagubo. The circumstances behind their forcing him to free her was because she was the victim of immorality. Rashi at the top line says, "V'kofu es rabo," and they forced the master to free her. Mitnei shelo hoisa ruuya. At that point, she was a chatzi shivcho chatzi bas chorin. She wasn't fit lo levit v'lo leben chorin. Who would marry her? A slave wouldn't be able to marry her because she's half free. A full fledged Jew would not be able to marry her because he is. He is prohibited in marrying bondmaids. What do we see from this story? That Abaye himself acknowledges when there's minig hefker, when there's loose behavior, when there's a violation of morality, she is to be free. The Gemara responds, Hochi hashta. How can you compare the case of the bondmaid in Pupadisa with regard to this din of Chetzi Shivcho v'Chatzi Baschorin? Hosam, in the case of Chatzi Shivcho Chatzi Baschorin, lo le'eved chazi v'lo le'ben chorin chazi. She's not fit for marriage to a regular slave, nor is she fit in marriage to a rank and file Jew. And therefore, she was not going to be protected by a husband. Hacha, in the case of the bondmaid in Pupadisa, and Abaye's opposition, even though there was a situation of immorality, Efshu d'miachid lo li'avdei u'minta lo, she could have been given over to a slave. She wasn't a chatzi evel chatzi ben choren, and she could have been given to a slave, and he, the slave, would be her mate, and he would watch her. Gufo, Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel. Gufo represents a focusing in on that which we had mentioned in passing earlier. Earlier, we quoted Rav Yehuda, who said, Kol hamashacher avdo oiver basay, anyone who frees his slave is in violation of a positive command in the Torah, shenemar lo oilom b'yam tavodu. The translation would indicate that you must always keep them in servitude, i.e. not free a slave. Meisvei, well, we raise an objection. Meisev Reb Elezer, shenichnas b'veis ha-knesses v'lo motza sora. There was a story involving Rabbi Eliezer who entered a synagogue and did not find 10 men assembled for prayer. You had, including Rabbi Eliezer, you had 9 men and a slave. V'shichur avdo v'shlim la'asora. And he freed his slave, thereby completing the minimum number for a quorum of 10 men. So he freed his slave. What about the prohibition? The Gemara says mitzvah shiny. When it comes to a mitzvah, sort of a public type mitzvah, as was the case over here, that's different. The mitzvah consideration overrules the violation of the asay. Tanu Rabbanan li'olam b'em tavodu rishus divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Kiva Omer Chova. In this source, we see a Tanaic disagreement regarding the level of obligation that this pasuk represents. According to Rabbi Yishmael, it's an option. In other words, freeing a slave would not be a sin. Rabbi Kiva says, La'olam b'em tavodu represents a chova, something of an obligatory nature. Hence, you would not be allowed to free him. The Gemara asks, regarding Rabbi Eliezer before, in the story of his freeing the slave to complete the minyan, to complete the group of 10, the Dilma Rabbi Eliezer, Sovar lo keman d'omar rishus, maybe he holds like Rabbi Yishmael, and instead of explaining before that that his motivation for freeing the slave was because of the mitzvah, and that enabled him to violate what otherwise would be prohibited, maybe Rabbi Eliezer holds like Rabbi Yishmael that there's no prohibition being violated in the first place. Lo sakadaitach. No, you can't think that Rabbi Eliezer holds like Rabbi Yishmael. Desanya behedya. There's an explicit Tanaic source in which it says Rabbi Eliezer omer choiva. Rabbi Eliezer holds like Rabbi Akiva that the olam bem tavodu is an obligation, is binding, is inflexible, unless of course there is a mitzvah consideration. Omar Rabba, Bahani Tlasmili Nachti Balibate Minichseon. As a result of three different, violations, owners of property will find themselves without their possessions. One, Demafki Avdayu Lecherusa. This, of course, is the connection to our discussion. People who are not diligent in observing this mitzvah of lo'ol b'em tavodu, but rather they free their slaves, and they are in violation of that positive command, the punishment is they will literally descend from their properties. They'll lose their property holdings. Number two, udesairi nechsayu b'shabata. People who on the Shabbos day check out their fields, seeing what they need. It reminds me of someone who checks out the financial column on Shabbos to see how his stocks are doing. And number three, udekavi sudesayu b'shabata be'idun be'midrasha. People who establish their meals. In other words, they fix their Shabbos meal time at the time that the rabbi in the community is holding forth a public lecture, is drosha, which basically was a public drosha for halacha. He would teach halachas in these public drushas, possibly other things as well, and it was expected that people would attend these public drushas, especially in view of the fact that most people were working during the week and were not studying Torah. This was their only opportunity for Torah study. And if a person figures, who cares? I'm going to have my Shabbos meal at that time. So let it be known that in retribution for being absent from the public Torah lecture, they stand to lose their properties. There were two families in Jerusalem. One was in violation of this. They set their meal time at the hour that the public drasha was being given, instead of having their meal earlier or later. No, they had it at the time of the public lecture. Another family violated what appears to be something else. they had their meals be'erev Shabbos. Rashi has two pshatim on that. The first pshat is in fact similar to what we mentioned before, that they had their meals on Friday night at the time of the public lecture. Another opinion is they always had large meals on Friday. Erev Shabbos refers to, in this, according to the second pshat that you find in Rashi, Friday as opposed to Friday night. And what's the problem with having large meals on Friday? The problem with that is that when Shabbos comes, you have no desire to have a special Shabbos meal. You've already been sated from a sumptuous repast on Friday. Ushtei and Nekru, these two families were uprooted. We continue in the Gemara. Omar Rabo, Omar Rav. Oh, we have a new marking. So we glance at the side where we have a no say. And in the margin, you will also find a mivne, structural note. So the no say reads as follows. Hamakdish Avdo, one who sanctifies his slave. V'lo Omar Beferu Shemakdish Oysei Ludam. If he doesn't say explicitly, I'm sanctifying the money value of the slave. He simply says, I'm maktish, hareni maktish es abdi, he says. Ma dino. What is the law with regard to someone who dedicates or sanctifies his slave? Lefi rabo marav, in the Gemara, we'll see Rabba quoting Rav, ho'eved yoytse lecherus. The slave goes free. Because by being Makdish, you're saying he's part of the Am Kadosh, part of the holy people, part of the Jewish people. Declaring a slave as being part of the Jewish people is tantamount to declaring him a free man. A second approach, Lefi Ha'atkofes Behemshech HaGemara, according to the attacks the Gemara makes on Rebbe, on Rabbo's teaching, Mashma Do'evet Kadosh L'domov, it appears that the slave is holy only with respect to his money value. And the slave does not go free. The diamonds, as our Mivneh heading indicates, are Shtei Lishonos B'Rav. There are two, let's say, versions of what Rav says. Makdish O Mafkir Avdo. Eved Yotzei L'Cherus. Makdish, we explain, sanctifying. Mafkir is person who declares his slave unowned. He removes himself from ownership of the slave. What is the result of that? Now the Gemara. Omar Rabo, Omar Rav, Hamakdish Avdo, Yetzei L'Cherus. One who sanctifies his slave. Translating this, by the way, itself is problematic. I would say it's better simply to preserve the Hebrew and say, when we say Hamaktish Avdo, it refers to a person who in Hebrew says Hareni Maktish Es Avdi. So if one says Hareni Maktish Es Avdi or Harei Avdi Kadosh, what is the result? So Rabba says he goes free. My time. Well, why by saying Hareni Maktish Es Avdi does he go free? Gufei Lo Kodesh. His body doesn't become sanctified. The concept of gufei kodesh, of kedushas haguf, applies to animals, kosher variety, animals that are unblemished. They're fit to be offered on the altar as a sacrifice. That would be a bodily and inherent sanctity. You don't do that with slaves. L'domi lo komar. And likewise, he made no mention of money value. He just said, hareini makdish es avdi. So there was no indication of the dedication of his money value, of his market value to the Beis HaMikdash either. So what did the man mean when he was Makdish Avdoi? Delehevei Am Kodosh Ka'omar. He was saying, I want him to be a member of the holy people, a reference to the Jewish people, i.e., I am freeing him. The result of freeing a slave is his becoming a full-fledged Jew. Rav Yosef Amarav, Rav Yosef's version of Rav is Hamafkir Avdo Yetzei L'Cherus, one who declares his slave unowned, the slave goes free. Mad Yomer Makdish, as far as Rabo is concerned, that Makdish goes free, Kol Shekein Mafkir. then all the more so, someone who declares his slave hefker, the slave goes free. Man Yomar Mafkir, Rav Yosef, who referred to the declaring of the slave unowned, that results in freedom. Avo Maktish lo, but being Maktish does not result in freedom. Dilma Ledomi Komar, it could be that by being Maktish as Eved, he really does refer to the Eved's money or market value as being dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash. So that even though he didn't say Demei Avdi Olai, Demei means the value of my slave is upon me and I'm obligating myself to give the money his market value, nevertheless, according to this approach, according to Rav Yosef, the owner would, by being Maktish the Eved, nevertheless would be obligated to give the money value, and it does not refer to freedom. There's a couple lines in brackets you can see. After the brackets, the Gemara will be asking a number of questions that are introduced by triangles on Rabbah. Within the brackets, there's a detailed question. But if we skip the bracket just for a moment, you see, it says, Omar Rabbah u'moisvinon ashmaitin. That means Rabbah himself raises an objection to that which he taught. Rabbah himself wasn't saying necessarily his own opinion. Rabbah was quoting Rav, and in light of that, Rabbah then says, and we ask on our own teaching from a Tanaic source. You'll see the Tanaic source begins with the word hamaktish, which we dashed underline. It's a case of someone being maktish his property, and in the property there were slaves. And one thing that you see from this Tanaic source is that as a result of the hektish, the slave becomes sanctified only with regard to his money value. Doesn't go free. So that's a problem for the teaching brought by Rav in the name of Rav, that by sanctifying a slave, he does go free. The Gemara will answer after that framed section. Notice the Gemara says, Mas nisen karama soleh de Rav, are you raising an objection to Rav from this Tanaic source? Rav Tanahu, Polig Rav himself has the status of a Tana, and hence he is entitled to say something that's different than this other Tanaic source. Tanoim can argue with one another. Now that the structure is hopefully a little clearer, let us continue in the bracketed section. By the way, if you need to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. The bracketed section contains a detailed question and the answer as well. Ibaya laho, tzorach get shichur lo tzorach. We just featured teachings of Rav, Maktish Maktish Avdo, or Rav Yosef's version of Mafkir Avdo, he goes free. Does the slave need a freedom document as well? Toshma, the Omar of Chiyah Bar Ovin, Omar Rav, Echot Zeh Vechot Zeh, whether it's Maktish or Mafkir, Geitze Lechirus V'tzorech Get Shichur. And he does require a freedom document. Omar Rabba Umosvinan Ashmaitin. And we raise an objection from a Tanaic source on that which we taught above. The source says, Hamakdish Nechosav, one who sanctifies, he's Makdish his property. The Hoyu Bohen, and within his property holdings were Avodim, our slaves. Ein HaGizborin Rashoyin Lehotzion Lecherus, the temple treasurers, the Gizbor is the treasurer, there were treasurers for the Beis HaMikdash, and they have no right to set the Eved, to set the slave free. Avol Moichrin Oison LaAcherim, what they do is they sell them to others. VaAcherim Motzien Oison LaAcherus, and those who bought the slaves from the Gizborin will have the ability to set them free. Rebbe Omer, Omer Ani, I say, Afhu noisein de me atzmo viotze, the slave, If he happened to have money of his own, you'll ask, how can a slave have anything of his own? Rashi explains that could arise in a situation where someone gave the slave money conditionally, on condition that your master has no holding in this money, so it becomes the slave's money. The slave could present that money that's equal to his value to the gizboren and go free. Mipnei shehu kemoicher lo. It's like him selling himself. Let's explain this a little more by going to the Rashi. The Rashi that we'll look at together is across from here, more or less, a line or two up. Ein ha-gizborim rashoim lotziyam l'cherus. V'afilu l'kabel miyad ho'evet pidyono. The gizbor cannot receive the slave's redemption value, even from the slave himself. The markings that you see indicate, just to, we have a bracketed section in the Rashi, let's skip it momentarily. V'hani gizborim ein rashoim l'kach, she'en gufon konui lehektish. The body of the slave is not owned by the Beis HaMikdash, shelo ikdishin al ledomin. The owners, when they dedicated their properties, they were dedicating the slaves as well with regard to their money value. V'zu derech shichur, the receiving of the money on the part of the Beis HaMikdash from either the slave himself or from others is considered derech shichur. That's a way of freedom. And the Beis HaMikdash doesn't have possession of the slave enough so to enable that to take place. Let's go over the bracketed section. Rashi had said that the Gizboren have no power to set the slave free. The Kaimolon, Eved Kina Es Atzmo Bekesef, an Eved can acquire himself through money. Im nosnu lo al menas shein the rabbi rishus boi. If money were given to a slave on condition that the master has no rishus, no power over the money, pode bo es atzmo miad bailov. The slave could offer that money given to him by an outsider, offer that money to his owner, and thereby go free. Vahani gizboren ein rashoyim lekach. The temple treasurers cannot do that. They can't receive the money, even if it's from the slave himself. Why not? She'en gufon konui lehekdish. The slave isn't owned bodily by the Beis HaMikdash. Elo ekdishon, shelo ekdishon elo ledomon. The initial sanctification of the slaves was only with regard to their market value, not as if the slave himself bodily becomes sanctified. Vizu derech shichruhu, and the receipt of money by the gizborim would from the slave would be considered derech shichru, velo derech mechira. That is not the way of sales. So what option exists for the Beis HaMikdash? Avol moichrin oison lachirim vadomen lehegdish. The slaves would be sold to outsiders. The money received for their sale would become sanctified. The oisan achirim otzino som lecherusim yirtzu. And the purchasers, if they should want to, they can free the slave. Rashi continues, Af hu noisin demei atzmo v'yotzim mimtzo odom shiei noisin loy kesef amenashein b'aylov rishuspo. If the slave would find someone to give him money with the stipulation that the owner has no control over those monies, the slave could offer that money to the Beis HaMikdash. Rashi goes on, Mitneshu kemochro hagizbor lo liasmos, as if the gizbor is selling the slave to himself, to the slave himself. Kishem shiyochol limkol achirim, just like the gizbor has the option of selling the slave to outsiders. Ubilvad shiyitnom derech mekach umemka velo derech pinyon, provided that the transaction is a financial business-like transaction and not in the style of redemption. What do we see from all of this? Almo hamakdish eved kadosh ladomov, the sanctification of the slave is not freedom itself. It's rather a sanctification of the market value of the slave. The reference to freedom in this source has to do with some subsequent action, but the initial sanctification was not a declaration of freedom. That is our question on Rav. The Gemara responds, Masnisin Karamis Alei Darav, are you raising a Brisa, this Tanaic source, as a challenge to Rav? Rav Tanahu Polig. Rav has the status of a Tana, and he can argue with this kind of Tanaic source. Ta Shma, again a triangle, another challenge. The Pasuk says, and here we have it in a frame, but we have to emphasize that the teaching in this source isn't a Tanaic teaching per se, but rather it's a drusha from a Pasuk. And a Pasuk is a more powerful source than a Brisa in raising an objection. The Pasuk says, Ach kol cheirim v'gomer, mei adam. The Pasuk makes reference to the word mei adam, Elu avodav v'shifchosav aknanim. This Pasuk has to do with sanctifications. We see from this Pasuk that one who is makdish his avodim, his servants, they become sanctified, not freed. And that is a kasha on Rav. The Gemara answers, Hocha b'mayaskinon, the circumstances behind this source, i.e. the Pasuk, the Omar Ledomi, the owner, when he was machrim, he declared chirim. Chirim is an expression of sanctification. He indicated that I'm dedicating the money value of my servant. I'm dedicating the money value to the Beis HaMikdash. Well, ihachi, idoch nami de Omar Ledomi, why can't we say the source before that Rav, that Rabbah cited, the previous triangle source, why is that not simply a case where the owner said Ledomi? Instead of saying that Rav Tanahu Upalig, this would have been a simple answer, that he dedicated the money value. The Gemara says, no, you can't say that that's the pshat in the source above. Notice we have a long answer. The answer is comprised of a series of quotes from that source. The double underlining that you see in the next couple lines simply introduces the quotes from the source. And in this long answer, we're showing how the source cannot be speaking about a case where the original owner dedicated in an explicit fashion his market value. Ihachi, the source above had said, Ein ha-gizborin rashoyim lahotzion l'cherus. The Gizborim, and according to the first opinion, cannot free the slaves. Well, Gizborim mayavidetayu. Obviously, the Gizborim wouldn't be able to free the slaves. They have no business, they have no ownership over the slaves to begin with. If you were to say that that source was talking about the owner explicitly saying, I'm only dedicating the market value. So the source, if that would be the circumstance, it would have been telling us something that's overly obvious. And sources don't do that. Vesu, another problem. If you were to say that the source quoted above by Rabbah was a case where he said, Ledomi, it said there, Avol moichrin oison l'achirim v'achirim oisin oison l'chirus. The Gizborn could sell the slaves to others, and the others will free them if they should want to. Well, achirim ayavitai, what's the connection of the outsiders to a slave that was initially never transferred to the Beis HaMikdash? A slave that was only the subject of a market value dedication. Vesu. Furthermore, Rabbi Omer, Omer ani afhu noisein demei atzmo v'yotzei mitneishu kemochro lo. Rabbi's description of the slave himself paying money, making it such as if the gizbor were selling the slave to himself, to the slave, If the initial dedication was a dedication simply of the slave's market value, what's the source? What's Rebbe talking about? The Gizbar selling the slave to himself. The slave was never up for sale to begin with. So with that, you can see that the only way to deflect the original question from that source was by saying that Rav Tanahu Polig, and not by saying that that source was talking about an initial dedication where Ladomi, where money was, market value was specified in an explicit fashion. Ta Shma, Hamakdish Avdoi Oisev Yoichel Shelo Hikdish Elodomov. A slave that was the subject of Hekdish, where the owner said, Ani Makdish Es Avdi. That slave continues to work, and he can produce money and buy food with it. In other words, his work production is not sanctified. The owner, by being Makdish the Eved, was simply making reference to the market value of the slave as something he pledges to give to the Beis Hamikdash. That's not like Rav. Rav said Makdish Avdo, the slave goes free. The Gemara responds at the top of Daf Lamed Tes. Ha money, this Tanaic source, and note by the way, this is a long answer. This source is Rebbe Meir Hi. Diomar, Rebbe Meir holds Ein Odom Moitzi Dvorov Levatola. When a person, literally it means a person doesn't say something for nothing. When a person is dedicating to the Beis HaMikdash, even if what the person says in and of itself doesn't make total halachic sense, we will interpret his statement as being an accurate type of dedication. Thereby, the person who said whatever he said is going to be bound to give a pledge to the Beis HaMikdash. Our explanation is a very general explanation. We spoke about people who make dedications that don't conform to formal rules of dedication and nevertheless become obligated. There are, as I said, there are. That was a general point. There are many examples that could be fitted into that. The Rashi gives some of those examples. What relevance does that have for us? If a person is makdish his eved, since he used the expression hekdish, he obviously, according to Rebbe Meir, he concluded in his mind that I'm dedicating his market value. And it's as if he said, ledomov, I'm dedicating his market value. But that's because you're going with Rebbe Meir. But as far as Rav's original halacha is concerned, if you're not going to be following Rebbe Meir, who says Ein Odo Moitzi Dvar of Levatola, the fact that you use the word Makdish can have a totally a separate connotation, i.e., freedom, like Am Kadosh, member of the holy people. The Gemara continues, Hochi Nami Mistabra. It's also likely that this is the answer, namely, the source that we cite at the bottom of Lamed Ches Amud Beis is a Rebbe Meir source, and hence it's an individual opinion. It doesn't represent a refutation of Rav, because in the continuation of that source, the Seifa, it says V'chein Hu Shehikdish Atzmo, a person was Makdish himself. Person who sanctified himself can continue working and eating. He didn't sanctify his work production. He was makdish his market value. He amris bishlam al Rebbe Meir. He shapir. If you say that this source is in accordance with Rebbe Meir, namely where a person can say things that don't make total halachic sense in and of themselves on a superficial or explicit basis. So we reinterpret what a person says to result in a temple dedication. That's the approach Rebbe Meir takes. So then this source, the Reisha and the Seifa, make sense. Eloi Amas Rabbanan he. If you say that the source is in accordance with the Rabbanan, Bishlamo Avdo, I can see in the Reisha, it could still, somehow it could still conform to the opinion of the Rabbanan as well. L'domi koi. A slave is considered property. It's something that has value, something that's bought and sold. And when he sanctified the slave, he might have, in fact, sanctified the slave himself. Not the market value of the slave, but he sanctified the slave himself. You'll ask, well, wow, you can't sacrifice a slave. What does it mean to sanctify the slave himself? It means something like someone sanctifies a horse. If you sanctify a horse, what's the procedure? You sell the horse, and the money that you get from the sale is then given to the Beis HaMikdash. That approach could apply to an Eved. Elo, Ihu, this Ihu means himself. A person, a Jew from the Jewish community, sanctifies himself. Is a Jew something, an entity that stands to be sold? A Jew is not viewed as a piece of property. So the Seifa, which says one who sanctified himself, that can be understood only in accordance with Rebbe Meir, who, as we explained before, will add interpretation, will reinterpret what a person says beyond the, as I say, the explicit statement, in order to make sense in the context of a temple dedication. We just made a distinction, by the way, between the Rabbanon and Rebbe Meir. This is a point that Rashi highlights. To say it in a succinct fashion, if one is Makdish and Eved, according to the Rabbanon, the Eved would be sanctified, Kadosh Li Mocher, sanctified with the expectation of that slave being sold. And the money for the sale would be given to the Beis HaMikdash. According to Rebbe Meir, even though a person didn't say, I'm Makdish the Eved Lidomov, Lidomov means with regard to its market value, I'm pledging the market value of the slave, but that's what he meant. Because Ein Odom Moitzi Dvarov Levatol is a very, I hope everyone sees this fine difference. The difference between Kadosh Li Mocher, which would be the Rabbanan's approach, and that approach would make no sense. You couldn't apply that as that approach. You couldn't superimpose that approach on the Seifa, where a person dedicates himself. A person is not to be sold. A regular Jew is not an individual that stands to be sold. An Eved, on the other hand, yes. As opposed to Rebbe Meir, who, in the case of Makdish, is Makdish Avdoi, isn't making any reference to an expectation of the slave being sold. Rather, the value of the slave is what the owner is dedicating. Lema ketanoi. Can we say that the issue of Makdish Avdo, does he become kadosh or not, is a machlokes tanoim? As I'm sure people who are veterans of Shas, of learning Gemaras, especially veterans of Gemara markings, Gemara Shirim, know that when you see Lema 98% of the time throughout the Shas, it represents a question, a suggestion that will be rejected. But in the meantime, we're going to present this as a question. We have a long question marking that the issue of Makdish Avdo, what is the result of that? Is the Eved Kadosh or not, would be a Machlokes Tanoim. Let's see the attempt. We should note, on the side of the Gemara, we have a Tatnose, a subtopic heading, / Mivneh, Nisoyin Lahamid Din Shel Rabo Marav Kemachlokes Tanoim. an attempt to set this issue up of as a machlokas tanoim, does the eved become sanctified or not? And we have a double underline house combination marking. These are nisyonis lahasbir machlokas tanakana of Shmuel. These are attempts to explain the Tanaic controversy that we're about to see. So structurally, you notice we have the question, and the first house marking appears that maybe this is the explanation of the machlokas tanoim. Then we have houses numbers 2 and 3, which depart from this attempt, as we will see. The Gemara, Leimo Ketanoi. Can we say that the issue of Makdish Avdo, is he kadosh or not, is a machlokas tanoim? Hamakdish Avdo ein moalin bo, one who sanctifies his slave. If he uses the slave for a personal benefit, there's no Mi'ilah violation. Mi'ilah is the name of the sin for one who derives personal benefit from things that were sanctified. If you say, as the Tanakhama says, Ein Mo'alin Bo, there's no violation. It would appear that the slave doesn't become sanctified. Rabban Shimon Amri Mo'alin Basaro. Rabban Shimon says that there would be a violation if you benefit from his hair. At this point, at this, we'll say, very superficial point, Rav Shimon Leal simply is to be viewed as saying, Mo'alin, yes, there is a Me'ilah violation. My lav behal komifligi. It must be that the following is the point of controversy. Damar sava kadosh. Rav Shimon Leal holds that if you sanctify your slave, the slave becomes sanctified. It doesn't mean he goes free. And Umar Savar, the Tanakhama says, Lo Kadosh, he doesn't become sanctified. What happens? Well, it could be like Rabba said, he goes free, but one thing is clear, is he doesn't become sanctified. The Gemara asks, V'tizbara, hi, Mo'alin v'ein Mo'alin bo. If the explanation is that the Tanakhama says he's not sanctified, Rav Shimon Amaleel says he is sanctified, why does the source use the term Mo'alin or Ein Mo'alin? Hi, Kadosh v'ein Kadosh miboyalit. The source should have read, according to the Tanakhama, Makdish Avdo Eino Kadosh. According to Rav Shimon Amaleel, the source should have said Kadosh. That's what it should have said. So rather we get off this approach and say Dekulei Almo Kadosh. The Tanakhama and Reb Shimon ben Gamliel say that one who's makdish avdo, the slave becomes sanctified. It's kadosh. Now, kadosh means he becomes sanctified limocher bedomov. Rashi, that's what you see in the Rashi. That means that the slave would be sold, and the money that you get for his sale would be given to the Beis HaMikdash. V'hacha behal komifligi. The machlokus in this Tanaic source is as follows. D'mor sovar avdo kimekarkoi domi, umor sovar kimetalteli domi. As far as the slave becoming sanctified, yes, he becomes sanctified. What about mi'ilah? Well, we said before, deriving personal benefit from sanctified items results in a mi'ilah, as we said, that's the name of the sin, a mi'ilah transgression. There is an exception to that rule, and that is benefit from real estate, from land that was dedicated. A person could dedicate land to the Beis HaMikdash. Let's say that a person benefited from the dedicated land. So the rule is Ein Me'ilah Bekarkois. What legal status do slaves have? I emphasize legal status. We're not describing physical attributes of the item, but rather legal categories. And the source for categorizing things legally is, of course, goes back to verses in the Torah. So regarding a slave, the machlokas is Marsova, reading again the Gemara, Marsova avdukim akarkoi domi. The Tanakhama who said that there is no mi'ilo violation in the slave, even though the slave has become sanctified, there is no mi'ilo violation because an evet kim mikar koidomi is paralleled by scripture to land. And when it comes to land, real estate, Ein me'ila bekarkois. Hence, the personal benefit you might have received from a sanctified slave does not result in a me'ila violation. By the way, it might be still prohibited to benefit from the slave, but me'ila, which is a specific type, a specific form of violation, would not apply. What characterizes a me'ila violation, you may ask? Well, if one was over, one violated the me'ila sin, he has to bring a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash. He has to compensate the Beis HaMikdash as well for his personal benefit. If we say there's no me'ila violation, those requirements won't exist. Nevertheless, it doesn't mean that you can go ahead and benefit from things that were sanctified. Umor Savar, we continue in the Gemara text, that's Rav Shimon Gamliel, he holds kimetalteli domi. Slaves are viewed as portables and hence subject to mi'ila. The Gemara asks, hi-hachi, if that is the explanation, ademiflugi besairo, instead of arguing about the hair of the slave, liflugu begufo, argue about benefiting from the bodily services of the Eved himself. Why the focus on its hair? Ela de kule almo avdo kimekarkoi dummy. Everyone, the Tanakam Shum, will hold that an Eved is parallel to land, so that in principle there should be no me'ila violation. The hocha besaira meligza is kimifligi. Here we're talking about something very specific. We're talking about hair, sairo. What's ha'omei ligozeis? It's hair that's fully grown, and it's time for a haircut. What is the status of hair on a person's head, attached, growing from a person's head? Hair that's very long. It's a length that most people would cut it off at that point. That is the machlokas. More so, the opinion of Shum Gamliel is that even though it's still physically attached to the Eved, and we said the Eved is like Karka, in your mind's eye, the long hair is considered as if it's been cut off already. Hair that's cut off is no longer part of the Eved. It's a portable, which lends itself to Me'ila, which is what Rav Shum Gamliel had ruled. Umor Sovar, the Tanakamas holds, Lav Kegozuz Domi. It's not considered as if it's already been cut off. It's still considered part of the Eved, and therefore there is no Me'ila because of what we said, that Eved Kemekarkoi Domi, according to everybody. With that, then, you can see we've explained the Machlokes Tanoim. At the same time, as far as the slave being the subject of Makdish, of a Makdish, the slave becomes sanctified, according to both the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Before continuing, we glance at the side where we have a subtopic heading. Nisoyun lahashvi seyer ha'imid l'gzos. There's going to be now an attempt in the Gemara to parallel the case of the long hair, the hair that's there, that is there for cutting, la'anovim ha'imdim l'vsor, to clusters of grapes on a vine that are fully ripened and they've reached the time for harvesting. Later, after the long question is raised, the Gemara will reject this attempted parallel. The Gemara, Lemo Hani Tanoi Kehani Tanoi. Shall we say that the machloikis between the Tanakam and Shum Liel that argued regarding the hair that's oimed ligzois is a parallel machlokas to the following? Disnan. We have a source here that deals with the general realm of moida b'miktas, someone who confesses partial obligation. The standard case is someone A approaches B, you know, Mr. B, you owe me $100, and B says, I don't owe you $100, I owe you $50. The Torah says that when you are moida b'miktas, you have to swear. You have to take a shvuah to confirm your statement. With that general background, we continue in the Gemara. Disnan Rabbi Meir Oimer, yesh dvorim shehen kekarka v'einan kekarka v'ein chachomim moidim lo. there are things in halacha that are like karka, but yet not like karka. Now, when we speak about karka in this context, there's another rule which we didn't say earlier, and that is ein nishiboyin ala karkois. Oaths concerning property matters, land, real estate matters, are not imposed. So, if you're dealing with a, say, a partial admission regarding a land-based matter, if it were really land, there would be no shivua. That's, again, a concept. Ein nishboyin ala karkois. So Rimeir says there are things that are like karka, but yet not like karka. And the Chachamim do not agree. Ketzad. Well, let's have a concrete example of that. Ketzad, how is that? Eser gefanim terunos mosarti loch. A says to B, I gave to you to watch. I gave over to you for you to watch, to be a shomer, 10 laden vines. It means vines with clusters of grapes growing from them. Vahalo omer, the shomer, B responds to A, Einon elo chomesh, there were only 5. And it's obvious something happened to these vines. There's nothing left. They were all destroyed. And A is coming with a claim to B. You owe me damages. You owe me restitution. The Gemara continues. Rabbi Meir Mechayev. Rabbi Meir obligates the shomer to swear because of Moideb and Mixas. He admitted 5 I was entrusted with and I was negligent. Anything attached to the ground is like the ground, and hence no oath. And vines and grapes were attached to the ground. So there's no, and here's a nice pun, there's no grounds for a shvua. The Omer of Yosi Bar Chanina, Anovim Ha'im Dois Livsar, Ika Binayu. The point of controversy concerns grapes that were omdos livsa, they were ready for harvesting. Fully ripened clusters of grapes were growing from these vines. The Rebbe Meir Savar Kibbutzuros Damion. Rebbe Meir looks at those grapes, even though they're attached, they're not viewed as attached. They're considered harvested. That would seem to parallel Reb Shimon ben Gamliel from the hair case above, and hence there was Me'ila Besairo. They would have the grapes would have a din of mitatalin, and hence reason for imposing an oath based on the halach of Moideh B'Mixas. V'Rabbonon Savri Lav Kivitzuros Damyan, and the Rabbonon would seem to hold like the Tanakama that while it's attached. It's attached. It's not considered harvested, and it's considered therefore like karka, no shvua. The Gemara says no. This parallel doesn't exist. Afilu teimo Rebbe Meir. Notice it takes a couple lines to develop this point, and we're saying that which it said ein moalin basairo, the Tanakama from the hair case, that there's no meila by the sear, is something that Rebbe Meir here by the vines would agree with. Ad kan lo komer Rebbe Meir hosam. Rebbe Meir said his point about the shivua, but he said that only with regard to the grapes that are fully ripened. And he said that hosam elo banovim. Once again, let's read that again. Ad kan lo komer Rebbe Meir hosam elo banovim. With regard to grapes, the kama, the kaimon mitchishkishi, the longer a fully ripened grape cluster stays on the vine, it then starts to go bad. Mitchishkishi means it goes bad. It's not beneficial for it to remain attached. Therefore, even though it's physically attached, we view it as if it's been harvested, as if it's been detached. Avol hocha. With regard to hair, okay, it's very long hair, but kama dekoy ashbuchi mashbach, the longer the hair stays on the Evid's head, it improves, it grows more and more, it grows longer, it grows thicker, whatever, there is improvement. You can't parallel long hair on a person's head to fully ripened grapes on the vine. Before we conclude, let us once again remind you that if you need to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.